Welcome to the What Matters Most podcast, presented by First United Bank and Trust. That's my bank. Visit us today at mybank.com.
Hello and welcome to What Matters Most, a podcast all about finances, community, savings, and security for you, your family, and your business. This podcast is brought to you by the helpful folks at my bank, First United Bank and Trust. I'm your host, Eric Nutter, and in today's episode, What Matters Most is our monthly economic update. And for this discussion, I am thankful to be joined once again remotely today by Brad Bolliard, Portfolio Manager in First United's Wealth Management Department. Brad, how's it going this morning?
It's going great, Eric.
I appreciate you joining me as always, and looking forward to hearing what the heck is going on in the markets. So why don't we start off with the negatives? Do you want to start with the bad news first, or
yeah, we'll start off with some of the negatives.
Okay.
That's what the headlines like to report.
Of course. Got to get those clicks.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, one of the biggest risks that are out there is monetary policy mistakes. So when you're into this tightening cycle that we've been looking at, is, you know, it's been designed to curb rising inflation. The Fed indicated that its rate hikes may soon be ending after a 25 basis point increase was announced at its March 2022 meeting. This increase brings the Fed total increase to 475 basis points so far, Eric, since they've started raising rates to fight inflation. And that brings the federal funds rate to a range of 4.75% to 5%. With all these rate increases, the Treasury yield curve is showing short-term rates to be higher than long-term rates. So we are looking at an inverted Treasury yield curve. Some of those longer-term rates, though, are looking pretty positive. Intermediate, in general, rates are higher. So, for example, the six-month is around 5%. When I talk about an inverted yield curve, so the short-term's higher. Six-month is around 5%, two-year around 4%. And 10-year yesterday was around 3.4%. That CPI number yesterday came in a little softer. And so now rates have kind of hung in there a little bit. And they kind of like the report that is showing that prices are starting to come down a little bit, but they're still high. They're still above the Fed's target of 2% when it comes to looking at the inflation number.
Yeah.
So again, we're looking at an inverted yield curve, which is normally a sign of future recession. Some of our analysts are only predicting, though, a 40% chance, which, you know, not too bad, 40%, 60% chance that it won't. But however, that's more, you know, concentrated here in the U.S. However, globally and in Europe, the chances do increase, and they increase to over 50%. So hate to come to you with, no concise conclusion on whether the analysts think there's going to be a global recession or not. They're 50-50. But higher rates are great for new investment and new cash or matured and called bond proceeds. And we'll discuss that a little more when I reach the positives. Some additional negatives, the Institute of Supply Management's Purchasing Managers Manufacturing Index. This is manufacturing. That fell further into contraction territory in March at 46.3%. And that's the fifth month of contraction and continuation of a downward trend that began in June 2022. Again, whenever I report these orders, I just want our listeners to remember that anything below 50% is contraction territory. Anything above 50% is expansion territory. And I'll go over the first few numbers here. New orders, 44.3%. Production, 47.8%. Employment, 46.9%. Backlog of orders, 43.9%. And new export orders, 47.6%. And that all remain in contraction territory. The last time the index was that low was in May 2020, during the early stage of the pandemic. Only 6 of 18 manufacturing industries reported growth in March. Most respondents are still seeing sales slowing and business being slow overall as budgets are cut. I do have some good news on the services side, though. We put that in the positive side, and we'll get to those expansion numbers here in just a minute. All right. I'd like to move on to future CPI. Well, let's talk about February CPI first. That was in line with expectations at 6% year over year. However, the month over month core CPI reading unexpectedly ticked up to to notch to 0.5% as core services remain hot. Investors take some comfort that leading indicators of shelter prices suggest future cooling. So, but this process is proving to take some time. According to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics yesterday, CPI for the month dipped to 5% from 6% in February on an annual basis. Economists had projected that the reading would fall to 5.2%. It was the smallest 12-month increase since the period ending in May 2021, yet still higher than the Fed's 2% target again. let's look at what the Dallas Fed survey had to say of member banks. You know, a lot of the banks have been in the news here in March and April. With loan demand and volumes declining and loan non-performance on the rise, that's kind of what they're looking at, some decline in loan demand. Bank of America said its credit stress indicator, while off mid-March lows at the apex of the turmoil, that remains in a zone that historically has seen the flow of credit freeze materially. So, you know, things with loan demand and volumes are declining a little bit. You know, a lot of the banking issues that you saw dealt with the surprise failure of SVB, Signature Bank, Silvergate, and the sale of Credit Suisse has brought some fears of instability of the financial system that sent a shockwave of uncertainty across some of those areas from the capital markets. But, you know, there's still a little bit of, you know, a lot of positives to look at on that side of things. Two other areas, though, on the negative side that I want to hit first, the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey that fell to a four-month low of 62 in March on growing worries of recession, and then also consumer confidence. Consumer confidence that increased slightly in March to 104.2, up from 103.4 in February. However, it's the expectations index that still looks bleak. And it's based on consumer short-term outlook for income, business, and labor market conditions that ticked up to 73 from 70.4 in February. However, for 12 of the last 13 months since February 2022, the expectations index has been below 80, and it's that level which often signals a recession within the next year. The cutoff date for the survey was March 20th, and that was about 10 days after the bank failures in the U.S. So let's move on from the negatives.
let's get to the good news, Brad.
I'll try. Non-farm payrolls. They rose actually by 236,000 jobs in March versus the consensus expectations of 230,000 gain. This was on top of February's upwardly revised gain by 15,000 jobs to a solid increase of 326,000. While the headline number of payrolls is still elevated, hours are being cut with the index of aggregate weekly hours falling 2 months in a row. The unemployment rate though fell to 3.5%. That was from 3.6%. Also, wage inflation eased to a new 21-month low of 4.2%, while the participation rate ticked up to three-year high of 62.6%. So, you know, I mentioned wage inflation easing. People think, oh, wages, why do you want them to ease? Well, it's all the factor of the broader market of things and the economy in terms of, you know, inflation and things slowing down a little bit for the Fed and getting things a little more under control. We all want higher wages, though.
sure. But so, why don't you talk through that a little bit? So by wages slowing so that there's not this ramped up increase, it brings inflation down, or has the
yeah, I mean, anytime, you know, the things that you would hope would kind of slow down here, and what the Fed's been looking at, because they're fighting inflation, they're raising rates, so the economy might slow down, is that jobs numbers that continues to be very, very positive, and along with that has been wage increasing. But that is one area where we're starting to see some ease there. You know, the prices of everything go up whenever you know, your jobs numbers go up or people are looking at healthy wages. And then all of a sudden, instead of 86 cents for a dozen of eggs, you're paying $6. But
right.
So it all kind of balances out really in the end. But, you know, they are starting to see signs of ease, and they are taking note of that. We do think that, you know, maybe they'll raise rates again by 25 basis points here in May. And then they might, you know, kind of pause and continue to see how everything kind of filters out in the economy. So, you know, we're not looking at those 75 basis points increases that we were looking at in 2022. We had several consecutively in a row in 2022, right. And inflation was still running rampant. But, you know, we are starting to see some easing there in that part of the economy. I also want to talk about initial weekly jobless claims. Those leapt by 228,000 for the week ending April 1st. That's compared, though, with a consistent expectations for a gain of only 200,000. Again, it's on the positive side because that's, you know, jobless claims in general are still looking pretty good in general. Small businesses like restaurants and bars have been in the main drivers of job growth. You know, I don't know if you remember, Eric, but a lot of local restaurants even, you know, hey, we need help.
Right.
That was the sign. Please come work for us. We got right. sign-in bonus, you know, $1,000 sign-on bonuses for you and so on. We are starting to see a lot of positives there and some job growth there and things getting a little bit back to normal in that area. The Labor Department reported on Tuesday that job openings fell, though, below 2 million at the end of February. That's still a high number, so it's still on the positive side. That was the first time in nearly 2 years that it fell below 10 million. Still, there were 1.7 job openings for every unemployed person in February. So, which is making it easier for some laid off workers to quickly find
a job.
An employment for now. So, you know, still some turnover there and still some promising outlook for those that may be on the lookout. Economic activity in the services sector. So we talked about the manufacturing side on the negative part of this podcast, and we're on the positive side. So services sector is on the positive side for March for the third consecutive month as the services PMI registered 51.2%. Again, anything above 50 is expansion territory. And nation's purchasing and supply executives in the latest services ISM report on business. The sector has grown in 33 of the last 34 months. And with a loan contraction in December, the ISM services index slowed to 51.2% in March from 55.1%. In February, production 55.4%, new orders 52%, employment 51.3%. They all fell, but they remain in expansion territory. While backlog, that was at 48.5%, new export orders 61.7%. They fell. But the majority of respondents report a positive outlook on business conditions. So, you know, services side looking pretty good compared to the manufacturing side. We will talk about consumer spending. It's still hanging on. Annualized light truck and auto sales rose at 15.28 million annualized pace in quarter one. It's their strongest pace since before the chip shortage. A lack of inventories represents the biggest drag on sales, an issue that automakers are working to fix. A faster production plan for this quarter.
Is that over? The chip shortage? We heard a lot about it.
Geopolitically, I would not say it's over. I mean, there's still a lot of risk out there. You know, all you hear about really Ukraine and Russia, and then you hear about China and Taiwan.
Right.
And then, of course, the issues in the Mideast with Iran and Israel and so on. So geopolitically, it's definitely an issue out there. But, you know, there are a lot of good things happening in the U.S. in terms of AMD and Intel wanting to build more plants and produce more chips.
More chips and, here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Other things that we're seeing is just simply the supply chain being a little more fluent than what it was after the pandemic. So, you know, things are kind of on the positive side. Advanced micro devices, I know they've been looking at producing more chips for the auto industry. And so I would say domestically, things are looking a little positive, but globally, not so much geopolitically. So there are some risks there. Okay. Again, globally, China's move away from its zero COVID policy to reopening a story should help clear the way for an acceleration in economic and earnings growth. So again, that kind of goes back to some of the supply issues that we're seeing. You know, things are a little more fluent than what they were with the fact that, you know, China's not on a shutdown.
Right.
It's in certain areas of their economy now. So
excellent. All right, Brad, well, take us into the home stretch here. So from everything that you're seeing in the markets, what are the conclusions and current strategies that you all are taking?
Yeah, so the reassertion of growth sector leadership may be a harbinger of the market making a decisive turn upward here recently, or it may be in another long line of head fakes over the past 15 months that we've been looking at. So the reality is that since reaching its all-time high near 4,800 early in January 2022, the S&P 500 has been a pattern of lower highs and lower lows. So as each tentative breakouts has instead flamed out. Regardless of which sector is leading, it is hard to envision the market making a conclusive move into a new bull phase as long as the financial sector is wobbly. Investors are also likely to remain gun-shy as long as the Fed is perceived as committed to fighting inflation, regardless of the consequences. The Fed's latest rate hike shows that the central bank remains committed to bringing inflation back to its target range, at least for now. And while we expect volatility to continue over the coming weeks and months, we also believe this bear market is in its later stages. The current bear market is already 15 months long and was down 27% at its lows. Recessionary bear markets have averaged negative 33% declines over 13 months historically. And again, a bear market, just for our listeners, is when the market is 20% down from its high. And a bull market, 20% higher from its low. But right now we've been looking at bear market and it's down 27% at its lows. So we want to remain pragmatic and putting cash to work in the shorter term, but also want to be using drawdown periods as opportunity for the long term. After the mid-March FOMC meeting, the Fed's post-meeting statement acknowledged the impact of the banking crisis, which the Fed chair said could lead to tighter credit conditions. Some interpreted the post-meeting commentary as a sign of the Fed hoping that the banking crisis might succeed where rate hikes had so far failed, insufficiently slowing the economy to get inflation back to the Fed's target range. The Fed will likely hike rates one more time by quarter point at the May FOMC meeting. Investors will then hold their collective breath that the Fed is finally really done.
It's the wait and see game. We'll see.
Exactly. So after discussing our negatives, our positives, and reaching what conclusions that we can, I just want to throw out there our current strategies right now. Cash, we are overweight. Money market rates are really high. A lot of them above 4.25%. Have no problem holding some cash there as part of our strategy for opportunities in the market. Right now we're with equities, we're modestly underweight. Where we have a good exposure to the alternative area, target of 3-8% of stocks, focused on an inflation hedge there strategy. We look at global infrastructure, global real estate, commodities, natural resources, and real assets. We're currently overweight tech, equal weight communications, financials, materials, utilities, energy, real estate, consumer discretionary, healthcare, and industrials, and currently underweight staples. International, we have a target of 7-12% of stocks, a small mid-cap target of 5-12% of stocks. Fixed income, we're mostly overweight. So we're focused on the intermediate and short-term bonds for new cash. We're very high quality, Eric, and are purchasing our exposure on the fixed income side. Moody's and S&P ratings, they divide everything up in terms of investment grade and junk status, but we are not even at the lowest levels of investment grade when we make our purchasing. We are actually Moody. We look at BBB plus Baa1 ratings or better. Mm-hmm. With our new purchasing, so very high quality exposure in our bond portfolio accounts, and then also when the Fed was raising rates and before they started raising rates, we were more short duration, and now in general rates are very high in general, looking at historical basis over the past years. So we do want to be focused on the intermediate term with bonds. That way you're not quite as risk on with some of the longer duration bonds that you might see in terms of price fluctuations and what the Fed wants to do with the rate changes if we do have a recession in the future. But intermediate, you're still capturing some of those higher rates that we've been looking at. That's one area that I did want to kind of touch on. I know I kind of mentioned it with the treasury yield curve, but you know, if you're looking at new investments, new cash or proceeds from matured and called bonds, short-term and intermediate really, you know, for example, broker CDs, FDIC insured CDs right now, for example, on a Morgan Stanley 18 month, you're looking at 5%, Eric, wow. 5% on a CD. And if that's monthly pay, you know, that's very, very, very good right now. 4 year even, if you want to hold on to those higher rates for a little longer than just the 6 month, 1 year period, because you don't know what's going to happen a year from now. If we do have a recession, the Fed has to fight and lower the rate.
Right.
You know, 4 years, you can still hold on to it for four and three quarters.
Yeah.
On an FDIC insured CD. And even the 5 year is above 4.5%. Morgan Stanley, for example, is at 4.65% recently there with their rate. Other quality areas that we look at is the 10-year agency, for example, 4.75%. Corporate, 5 year, non-callable, that's 4%. I didn't touch on too much with the tax freeze. They're averaging around 3.5% to 3.75% going out 12 to 15 years. So there's a lot of opportunities out there, Eric, where when it comes to new cash, new bond investment on the fixed income side. And that's definitely an area that we want to capture, especially for the intermediate term of bonds. But yeah, I hope our little discussion here, our podcast presentation is, you know, giving some comfort to our listeners and letting you know about what we're looking at in terms of negatives and positives out there in the market, what conclusions we can make, and what our current strategies are given all the news that's out there in the headlines. So, you know, just don't let the headlines scare you too much. They like to dwell on those clicks, like you said earlier.
That's right. That's right. That's what it's all about in their world. So, well, Brad, sincerely, thank you for joining us as always and providing such helpful insights. If someone listening has a question or they want to learn more, what's the best way they can get the support they need?
Yeah, you can customize your plan today and call us at 855-829-7192 or also reach us on our website at mybank.com/wealth.
Excellent. Brad Ballyard, Portfolio Manager in First United's Wealth Management Department. Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you, Eric.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can always find more episodes by visiting mybank.com/podcast or find us on your favorite podcast app. You can also leave feedback, ask questions, or request a topic for us to discuss by sending an email to podcast@mybank.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next time with more helpful content. But until then, we wish you the best in focusing on what matters most to you.
First United, my bank for life.
This document is a general communication being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be taken as advice or a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose in any jurisdiction, nor is it a commitment from First United Bank and Trust or any of its subsidiaries to participate in any of the transactions mentioned herein. Any examples are generic, hypothetical, and for illustration purposes only. This material does not contain sufficient information to support an investment decision and should not be relied upon in evaluating the merits of investing in any securities or products. In addition, users should and determine together with their own professional advisors if any investment mentioned herein is believed to be suitable to their personal goals. Investors should ensure that they obtain all available relevant information before making any investment. Any forecasts, figures, opinions, or investment techniques and strategies set out are for information purposes only, based on certain assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change without prior notice. All information presented herein is considered to be accurate at the time of production, but no warranty of accuracy is given, and no liability in respect of any error or omission is accepted. It should be noted that investment involves risks, The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate in accordance with market conditions and taxation agreements, and investors may not get back the full amount invested. Both past performance and yields are not reliable indicators of current and future results.